the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Shavua Tov. Pesach is finally over.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that a piece of toast with Marmite could taste so good.
Marmite? Really, hey?
Absolutely.
Well, either you are or you're not, I suppose.
That is very true with Marmite. That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in Israel, after Pesach is really more about Mimuna than anything else. Mimuna, the great festival that's celebrated mostly by our Moroccan friends. And of course, comes with its own food. People can't sell their chametz quickly enough, or buy back their chametz, I'm sorry, quickly enough after Pesach in order to get Mimuna on the road. Parties, usually beginning on the night at the end of Pesach. I heard the music going, the drum beats, people gathering together, traditional Mimuna celebrations. It's been adopted quite broadly in Israel, even though it's very much a traditional Moroccan festival that comes with our Jewish cousins from Morocco. They like to celebrate immediately Pesach goes out. Very, very festive, lots of fun. I'm not quite sure if they're celebrating the end of Pesach or if there's some other significance to it, but certainly, like any good Jewish festival, the food is, it's all about the food. It's all about the food. So, yeah, we had Mimuna Saturday night and yesterday. And, of course, today, the Easter weekend, which we shouldn't forget about, many activities ongoing in Jerusalem for the Easter weekend. The traditional walk of the cross took place on Friday. This time, for the first time since 2 years ago, obviously last year, things were called off due to the coronavirus. Fortunately, this year, it went ahead as usual. Thousands of people thronging the Via Dolorosa, carrying their crosses towards the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the final stages of the cross. And it comes with quite an interesting discovery recently at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre was actually constructed in about the 4th century and has most of it was constructed really in the 1800s, but initially in the 4th century to try to encompass all of the final stage of the cross, the location where Jesus was reputedly crucified. The real cross, the so-called real cross discovered by Saint Helena, we understand, and then the Church of the Holy Sepulchre built after that. But in the walls of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, for those people who've visited the place, which is a very interesting place to visit, even for people who are not Christians, but in the walls of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, there's numerous crosses that seem to be almost like graffitied into the wall. They're not painted on, but they're almost like chopped into the wall. The walls are all the way around the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And there's been an ongoing exercise to try to understand how those crosses actually came to be in the wall. Some people thought that it was just worshippers who arrived from all over the world and decided to leave their mark by putting a cross into the wall. But the crosses were all very, very even, very, very similar to each other. And so it didn't seem like they were randomly put there by people who are unrelated to each other. And it seems now the latest theory, at least, is that the pilgrims who came from all around the world actually got a mason. There were masons who put these crosses into the world in the walls. So they are almost like graffiti put in by people who have come from around the world, but they contracted a local person to do it for them, and hence the uniformity of all the crosses, which are spread out all the way around the walls of the church. So an Easter story, and of course
really
Easter very, very, very related to Pesach, because Easter is one of those Christian holidays that's actually governed by the date, governed by the lunar calendar rather than by the solar calendar. And for people who don't realize it, there's also the 7-week counting period after Easter until Pentecost. So very, very similar.
I didn't know that.
To our Pesach.
Just say that again. I had no idea.
Yeah, 7 weeks between Easter and Pentecost. I don't know that they count it as religiously
like
as we count the days of the Omer.
Right, yeah.
But certainly a 7-week period that separates, 50 days, that separates Easter from Pentecost in the Christian religion.
Wow, okay. I've learned something because I had absolutely no idea. All right, let's talk politics, although I'd rather talk religion. President Rivlin will begin his consultations today with party leaders ahead of deciding who to invite to form a government. This coincides with the start of the introduction of evidence to the trial of the Prime Minister. So these two events are two very big events. Will they impact each other?
Well, therein lies the big question, because as we've already discussed, President Rivlin will today be beginning his consultations with all of the party leaders. Lots and lots of speculation, meetings behind the scenes, successful meetings apparently between Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, less successful meetings apparently between Prime Minister Netanyahu and Naftali Bennett, lots of speculation about who might nominate who. In terms of becoming prime minister, and ultimately who will get the most nominations, which will likely influence the president's decision as to who he will hand the mandate to. As things stand at the moment, it seems as if the change camp, the anti-Netanyahu camp, is split between Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, and that may well serve to work to their detriment, because it seems, as things stand at the moment, that Prime Minister Netanyahu is likely to get more nominations than the change camp. Still not enough to get him over that 60 line that is required to form a government to be the majority in the Knesset, but still probably more than the change camp, which will be split between Bennett and Yair Lapid. We're still unclear as to who the Ra'am and the Joint Arab List parties will nominate to be the prime minister. I think that they will also be quite influential in ultimately getting the numbers together for the president to make his decision. But as you say, also the trial of the prime minister, at least the introduction of evidence in the trial of the prime minister, due to begin today. The prime minister has been allowed not to attend all of the hearing that is due to take place today, but he has been required to attend the prosecution laying out its case, at least at the start of today's hearing. So the Prime Minister will be in court this morning to hear the prosecution's case against him before the first witness is called to the stand. And we understand at that point that he will be excused from the rest of the day's proceedings. And I'm guessing he will have other business to conduct in terms of meeting with the president and still trying to do whatever he can to form a coalition. Will they impact on one another is really the magical question that everybody's asking. I think on the one hand, the trial doesn't seem to have had any impact on the election and on his attempts to form a coalition. I mean, that has been ongoing in the background. Everybody who came out to vote knows that the Prime Minister has been charged with fraud and with all of these other crimes that have been set out against him. The potential members of the coalition know that too. They understand that he might be found guilty of these charges. So I don't think that the trial now has any major influence over him attempting to form a coalition. Having said that, if he does succeed in forming a government and he does become the prime minister again, that may well have quite a significant influence on the trial. We've already seen that the trial judges have been very, very reluctant indeed to be seen at all to be meddling in the politics of the country. They didn't want the trial to be ongoing during the election period. They didn't want any accusations to be leveled against them that they might well have caused any influence at all over what the outcome of the election might be. But it seems as if the judicial system in general is treading very, very cautiously here, and that they may well be influenced by the outcome of whether the Prime Minister succeeds in forming another government or not. And there are people who feel that the only way that the Prime Minister can really manage to stay out of court at this stage is by forming a new government. And there have been lots of speculation about how the Prime Minister is trying every possible way to be as creative as possible. Some people have suggested that he be nominated to be the president. The president, of course, comes without much influence in terms of the policy of the day. He doesn't want really to be outside of influencing policy. He really wants to be on the ball and you know, shaping the future of Israel still, even after this many years as prime minister. There have been some discussions about potentially changing the presidential role to become more of an executive role. I think that that will require a lot of political changes and seems to me at least to be unlikely to come to bear in the near future. But lots and lots of speculation about how Prime Minister Netanyahu might be able somehow to become so embroiled in the political system that it does have an influence on the trial judges and potentially on the outcome of his trial. So a lot of speculation around that.
Wow. Very, very, very interesting. But it is the fourth election in the matter of 2 years, and it hasn't seemed to have impacted much either way until now.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, there are people who feel that if it hadn't been for the fact that we'd been having these elections rolling around and the Prime Minister had been involved in the politics of the day, people feel that that trial would have been much, much further progress than it is now, and the only reason that it's really taken this long to get to the stage is because of these elections and things like that. So I think that there potentially has already been some sort of an influence over the way in which the trial has been conducted.
Let's just talk for a moment about what's been going on in Jordan that was revealed over the weekend. That's a very, very interesting story. Apparently there was a plot to overthrow the king. That was revealed over the weekend. Who led the plot? What is the impact on Israel? Give us a sense of what's happening here.
Well, the plot is reputedly been led by the king's younger half brother, Prince Hamza.
Brothers.
Half brothers, because of course the king, both of them came from the same father, but from different mothers. And what happened was that King Abdullah, who took over when King Hussein passed away, he, of course, was the heir apparent and took over relatively automatically. But at the time of King Hussein's death, he was married to Queen Nur. And Queen Nur's son is Hamza, the younger son. And she influenced her husband in his final days before he passed away to nominate Hamza to be the crown prince when Abdullah took over. And so Abdullah respected that and respected Queen Nur at least for a few years. But it took, I think, something like 5 years before Abdullah decided finally to get rid of his younger half brother as the crown prince. And Abdullah in favor of his own children, of his own heirs becoming the crown prince to the palace in Amman. But now it's transpired that Hamza may well have been involved with other what's called foreign entities who have been trying to plot somehow to overthrow the king. Jordan in a very, very sensitive situation, and particularly the Jordanian royal family, because the royal family, of course, are the Hashemites. They are a minority in Jordan, and so they have a very tenuous situation, even without their own family getting involved and influencing the outcome of things. But Jordan, the economy, very, very weak economy indeed. It doesn't really have natural resources to speak of. It doesn't really have much of an economy. And so the king, for his own finances, is very reliant upon foreign powers who come to his rescue to help him with things that he needs to take care of. And he's very much reliant upon his friendship with the United States. And of course, what the king has managed to achieve up until now is stability in Jordan. And so, of course, the moment this is any instability is sensed, then a lot of the powers around the Middle East have come to support the king to try to restore the stability, because even though it is a minority government, stability is everything. The interesting little snippet before I leave you to get on with news is that there has, of course, been an Israeli involvement. Apparently a former Mossad agent, has been fingered as being somebody who was going to somehow spirit the king and Hamza and his wife out of Jordan to allow them to escape. Of course, that didn't happen. Hamza at the moment under house arrest in Amman. And of course, Israel's interest, I think, is just to see stability rather than to favor one party or the other.
Very, very interesting. And I'm sure this is going to play out quite significantly in Jordan over the next few days.
I'm expecting it is. I mean, Hamza, as I say, under house arrest, many of those around him have been arrested, taken into custody. So the king very, very firmly put his foot down to try to stop any of this from going anywhere. I think there is still a lot of water to flow under this bridge. Mm-hmm. Many interesting things that we're going to find out about all of this.
No doubt at all. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Rao, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow.